Hello and welcome to the Raw podcast brought to you by the Sunderland Echo. We're back for another Monday podcast after Sunderland's goalless draw against Bristol City at the Stadium of Light. The Black Cats are now preparing for Tuesday's match against Leeds United at Elland Road. My name is Joe Nicholson and I'm joined by my fellow Sunderland writer at the Echo, Phil Smith. Phil, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, not too bad. A little bit better than we were after the Blackburn game, which I suppose probably doesn't say a great deal. And I guess it probably says something about the way the season's gone that you're feeling a bit better after a 0-0 draw. But there we go. We are where we are, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose in isolation, looking back now a few days on from the Bristol City game, you could dress it up as a good performance. Sunderland had more than enough chances to win the game. They had 57% possession. They had 7 shots on target to Bristol City's 2. The goalkeeper for Bristol City, Max O'Leary, made some excellent saves and he was the man of the match. But given the side's run, given Sunderland's run and kind of what had come before it, it just felt quite flat, didn't it, on Saturday? And two teams mid-table with nothing to play for in terms of the kind of the league position. So how do you kind of reflect on it a couple of days on now?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, as you say, it's a bit of an unfamiliar feeling for all of us, really, isn't it? And that we're used to someone being fighting at one end of the table. You know, you probably have to go back to Steve Bruce's, you know, first full season in charge for a period like this where someone had gone in the last 7 or 8 games with absolutely nothing to play for. So it's kind of something that I think we're all adjusting to where there doesn't seem to be a huge amount on the games. I think in this case, it's particularly flat because, of course, you know, it shouldn't really be like this, if that makes sense. So I imagine that for some clubs, you know, even if it had been like this last year, you might have made the case, well, it's a period of stabilisation. We never expected to be up there anyway. But of course, Sunderland are in a scenario where they should be fighting for the playoffs. You know, there's no real reason for them to be where they are now. And so I think it's not just that there's a little bit of apathy because there's not a lot on the games. I think there's a lot of frustration. But having said that, you know, the performance was objectively much better, especially in the first half. I thought the second half, it was a pretty poor game all round, but obviously the conditions weren't great, maybe a little bit of fatigue given the fixture list. But at least the one thing you could say in the first half is that Sunderland looked like Sunderland again, didn't they? There was, you know, they pressed Bristol City, they forced them into a lot of mistakes. Some of the football was quite good, probably to a large extent because Jack Clark was back. I mean, I think we all kind of knew it all the way through the season, but the last few weeks have shown just how important Jack Clark is. And they look a totally different team when he's in it. So, you know, there were definitely positives to take, but I think overall, you know, there is this sense that we're kind of going through the motions a little bit in the last weeks of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of an obvious thing to say, but having Jack Clark back in the side, it does give them such a big lift. Just his kind of directness, the way he can draw opposition players to the ball and just create space for others. So I think it was a big boost to have him back. Obviously, he's probably still not quite at his best yet, understandably so, because he's just come back from an ankle injury. But just to have him back, and I think when Roberts gets up to speed as well, you can see that they're a much different kind of attacking outfit compared to what they were in kind of the last few weeks. But I just wanted to touch on someone who wasn't involved, Abdullah Bar, not even on the bench, quite surprisingly, I thought, considering he has played quite a lot under Mike Dodds since Dodds has been in charge. He didn't play in the Blackburn game, so thought he could even come back into the starting 11, but wasn't even in the squad. Dodds was asked about it after the game and didn't say there was an injury, kind of suggested it was just a selection call and wasn't named on the bench. So what do you kind of that make of that situation with Barr not being involved, particularly as he is Sunderland's player? You've got Mason Burstall on the bench, who's probably going to go back to Chelsea in the summer. You've got Bradley Dack, who we're not sure if he's going to get offered another deal. So what do you kind of make of Barr's situation and what Dodds said after the game?
Yeah, you make a really good point there. And it's someone who Dodds has used quite a bit. So it's kind of come from nowhere a little bit in terms of not even getting on the pitch against Blackburn, not being in the squad. I think obviously, you know, the one positive from the weekend is that Sunderland do have quite a lot of options in forward areas now. And I suppose you'd make the argument that whoever had not made the bench would have been asking the question as to why. So if it had been Mundell who'd not been on the bench, you would have said, well, why is Mundell not in January signing? So I can kind of, you know, there was always going to be somebody who had to drop out, but I was surprised it was Barr. I do think that Barr's a bit of a frustration for me, not him personally, just generally how his season's gone, because I actually felt that in the first few months of the season, I felt like he was finding a bit of stability. You know, the coaching staff, Tony Mowbray, had obviously decided that they wanted to try and play him as a winger this season rather than as a 10, which I think is probably Barr's preference, but we've not really seen him be consistent in that position, to be fair, since he came to Sunderland. And I thought he was doing pretty well. You know, if I think back to that win at QPR, where he scored that fantastic volley, he was doing really well. And actually, when Patrick Roberts got injured, something that we all thought would have a huge impact on the team, Barr kind of did all right. But then obviously what happens is, and we've seen it so many times over the years, when a new head coach comes in, everyone kind of has to start again. And I felt like we fell back into that pattern with Barr, where all of a sudden he's playing loads of different positions. He's playing off the left. He's playing as a 10. He's like playing in midfield. And I just felt he lost loads of momentum. And ultimately, like, it's probably a while since we could say like Barr's had a really strong performance. And so in that sense, you can't say it's like a decision that's totally shocking that he's not in the squad. It's not as if he's been sort of knocking the door down at start, but I do feel like it's a source of frustration for me that his season's really, really ebbed away, I think. But I only put part of that down to Barr. Obviously, players are always accountable for their performance, but I do think it kind of sums up what can happen when you kind of have a period of turbulence and the players lose stability, they lose momentum. I do agree with your basic point. I'm not sure at this stage of the season what the value of having players who aren't going to be here next year in the squad, particularly if they're not coming off the bench. You know, if you bring in them on at 0-0 with 15 minutes to go, then you can kind of see the logic, because you're obviously going to impact the game. But when you've got players who probably aren't going to be here next year, not even getting off the bench, that is quite hard to work out. So I thought it was a really strange one, to be fair. The one thing, you know, as we've said now, is that there are a lot of options in the wide positions, and there's a lot of us kind of saying we'd like to see Tommy Watson get in the squad as well. So I suppose you have to be fair and say, well, if that's the case, someone's going to have to miss out, aren't they? But yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch that develop over the next few weeks. Dodds has come and suggested that, you know, he would be back in the squad. It's not as if there's been some major issue or whatever. But yeah, an unusual one. I think you probably, Barr's a, yeah, one of a few players who the season's kind of fizzled away, hasn't it? And ultimately, that's down to the players. But I think also it sums up the fact that, you know, Sunderland's been a bit dysfunctional, I think, for a few months, and players do tend to be impacted by that. And I think it's probably a bit of a classic example of that.
Yeah, another thing that Dodd said that we'll come on to later in the podcast is that kind of he was asked about younger players maybe getting on the bench, maybe some of the players that have impressed for the under-21 side, people like Tommy Watson, people like Harrison Jones, and he kind of said that he's not just going to put players on the bench. He kind of wants to put out the strongest team, basically, is kind of what he said for the remaining few games. And definitely after losing 5-1 against Blackburn, that wasn't the opportunity to bring in some young players with very limited first team experience. But as you said, there are a few options now on the bench. I suppose probably the surprising one for supporters is Burstow, considering, as you said, he didn't get onto the pitch and seems highly unlikely that he's going to be at Sunderland next season, even though they did try and sign him permanently last summer. But someone who was on the bench, it was good to see him back, was Adji Elise, who came on in the second half at left back. And as you and James were kind of talking about in the on the whistle video after the game, Sunderland haven't really addressed that left back issue with injuries to Sirkin and Elise this season. Leo Yelder has come in, and I don't want to kind of overly criticise him because he has said his favourite position is centre back, but just hasn't quite lived up to the level that, say, Elise or Sirkin have been in the team. So big boost, wasn't it, to see Elise come on, and hopefully he can now get a run of games and get a good pre-season behind him going into next season.
I think it's definitely been a big factor this season, that left-back position. Obviously, the one we've talked most about is the striker, which has definitely been the biggest issue this season. Probably the one we've talked about second most is midfield in the absence of Corey Evans, and that's probably been the second biggest issue. Left back has definitely been, you know, up there. It's been a problem position all season, I think. Probably the player who best stepped into that role was Trey Hume, but I know that was something that the coaching staff also kind of agonised over, because although he would do a job for you, you know, they felt the team was losing a lot from him not being on his favourite side. And we have seen that in recent weeks when he's been much better in that role. So I think it's been a huge issue. And I think that, you know, the January one was a difficult one, wasn't it? Because you're looking to recruit players, but also mindful that if Elise and Sirkin can get back fit and stay fit, they're going to be your two kind of first choice options, and you don't want to kind of overload the squad. And we've probably seen that with both Styles and Yelda, who are players who can play left back, but definitely aren't, you know, left back first and foremost. And I think that's just been reflective in their performances. That's not a criticism of them. As you say, Yelda was very clear to you, wasn't he, when you spoke to him, that he saw himself as a centre-back first. Yeah. Styles is more of a midfielder who can definitely play at left wing-back, but I'm not sure he's played left of a back four much at all in his career, and we've probably seen that at times. So I think it's been a big issue throughout the season. If Serkin and Elise are both fit next year, then it makes a massive difference to this team because of, first and foremost, what they bring in the final third. They're both very, very good at overlapping, at getting into good areas. Defensively, they're strong. And they also bring a lot of flexibility because, as we know, both of them are very, very good playing on the left of a back three. So whoever, you know, the head coach is next year, if he's got those guys fit, you know, there's every chance both of them could play in the same team at times. And I think that brings so much energy and athleticism to the Sunderland team. So that's a huge one. And, you know, we're just touching wood, aren't we, that, you know, a break in the summer and then maybe a full pre-season and these two players could be back to where we've seen them at times, because they, Sunderland are a different prospect when both of them are available and one of them's playing at left back, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has obviously been a very challenging season for Elise. I think he's only played 3 championship games this season, including the one against Bristol City. Obviously, he had the kind of a recurrence of his quad injury, it was, at the end of last season after coming back in the playoff game against Luton, had surgery on that, and then had another kind of reoccurrence of that in January. So it's been a really tough season for him. So it was just good to see him back out there. And he didn't look out of place when he came on. I thought he was impressive when he did come on and looked really solid at left back. And it'll be interesting now to see if he does come into the starting 11 against Leeds on Tuesday, because as we said, when he comes back into the side, I think it does make them a lot stronger. And it's going to be a very, I'd say, highly charged atmosphere at Elland Road going there on Tuesday. They're obviously still in the race for automatic promotion. They were beaten 2-1 by Coventry on Saturday, Leeds, and missed the chance to go top of the table. Maybe there could even be some nerves there with them losing that game against Coventry. Sunderland could go there and it could be maybe a nervy atmosphere. But what kind of chances do you give Sunderland going there against what is, let's be honest, on paper, a very strong lead side for a championship team?
Probably not a huge chance at the moment, if I'm honest.
But then they did beat them in December, didn't they? At the stadium,
they did beat. I think their home form this season has been exceptional, hasn't it? And I think even their recent little, they've sort of had a little bump in the road, but that's mainly been away, hasn't it? So their home form over the period, over the course of the season, has been exceptional, really. And I do think, for all that, I know it's easy to sort of say that, yeah, it was off the back of a few poor results when they beat Leeds earlier in the season, and Mowbray is gone, and obviously there was some uncertainty. Personally, I think the team was in a lot stronger position then than it was now. I know, obviously, as we talked about earlier, we've got Clark and Roberts back, but as you rightly said, Roberts definitely isn't fully back up to speed. We've seen that this week. You know, Clark, thankfully, is so good that even when he's not fully up to speed, he still makes an impact, but he's not probably where he was, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. So I think it's an incredibly difficult game, to be honest. I don't go there with a huge amount of hope. And the one thing I would say is that, you know, when we talk about giving opportunities to players and maybe rotating and having a look at some potential options for next year, I do think realistically, having lost 5-1 to Blackburn last Monday, I think you probably do just have to pick the strongest, most experienced team you can go away to Leeds, because I think you have to respect how good they are. And I don't think it's necessarily going to do players who aren't fully up to speed much of a favour to throw them into that game, to be honest, certainly not young players. So for me, I'm looking at these two very, very difficult games, away at Leeds, away at West Brom. And I think you do just have to pick the team that you best think can compete and can best handle that at the moment. Get through those two games, and then you're looking at the remaining fixtures. You've got Millwall, Watford and Sheffield Wednesday. And maybe that's a moment in which you could look at it and say, well, okay, can we get a youngster who's doing really well on the bench? Can we get them 20 minutes? Can we get a start for a Tommy Watson? Or something like that. So I do personally definitely think that there needs to be a bit of a, there should be some scope for some rotation at the end of the year and having a look at some younger players and giving them that taste of championship football. For me personally, now, this week isn't the time for that. I think that you've got to be really quite humble about the fact that Sunderland at the moment, for all the Bristol City performance was improved, they're not a great championship side at the moment. And I think you have to be really respectful to two very, very good championship teams that you're about to play. I think you just have to pick the strongest team possibly and hopefully get something out of these games and then take a breath and sort of reassess moving into those last three games where I think it might be a potentially better environment to maybe have a look at some of these youngsters.
Mm. Having said that then, Phil, what sort of changes, if any, could Mike Dodds make to the team? Perhaps Elise comes in at left back, but we've said before that up front, Job has probably looked the most effective Sunderland player leading the line compared to the other options there. Clark's obviously now back and will start the game if he's ready. So are there any other changes that you could see Dodds making for this game from the game on Saturday?
I don't think he'll make many at all. I think Elise potentially will come back in just because, as you mentioned, he looked so at ease on Saturday. He looked pretty much right up to speed. Maybe he'll start tomorrow and maybe rotate out again at West Brom. I know the one thing I would say with Elise is it makes absolutely no sense to push him too far now and risk another injury. The most important thing is that Elise on day one of pre-season is ready to go again and sort of have an uninterrupted pre-season, because that's clearly what he needs. So you don't want him to be playing too much, but having said that, I don't see any reason why he couldn't sort of start tomorrow and see how he goes. The only other really change that I could potentially see is maybe Roberts for Rigg, which is absolutely no knock on Rigg whatsoever. I think he's doing really, really well over the last few weeks, but Dodds has talked about the fact that he's still so young and you do have to manage his workload a little bit. My instinct tells me that they're probably not going to start him three games in 7 days, because that's not really anything that he's done before in his career at senior level. So I do just wonder if maybe Roberts will come in, especially given that it is Leeds away. Roberts a bit more of an experienced figure, a bit more experience with that kind of atmosphere and environment. And then maybe you could, you know, Rigg, I'm sure he'll come off the bench because his performance deserves it. And then maybe you could look at bringing Rigg back in, whether it's in midfield off the right or it's the 10 on Saturday, maybe. So I can see him bringing Roberts back in potentially for Rigg, which, as I say, it's no criticism of Rigg whatsoever. I just think you do have to manage him fairly carefully at this stage. Other than that, I don't see a great amount of change. He's been really clear, Mike Dodds, hasn't he, that at the moment he's not experimenting. He's not looking to give out opportunities. He's trying to pick the strongest team to get a couple of wins on the board after a pretty dire run. So I don't see many changes. Two, possibly, as I said, Elise and Roberts maybe. Beyond that, the one thing we don't know sitting here is whether there's any little niggles, whether there's any fatigue from what has been, you know, quite a challenging fixture schedule. But right now, I don't see much in the way of significant changes, no.
Mm. And one thing Dodds did say when he was asked about giving younger players an opportunity, he did mention Rigg, and it's easy to forget that he is still only 16, the fact that he's still starting games and doesn't look out of place. He's now kind of moved onto the right-hand side and is playing that role, but still doing it very well and not looking out of place in a senior first-team environment, which is really encouraging for him. And I'm sure we'll see him get more opportunities between now and the end of the season in these final five games. You are off to speak to Mike Dodds this afternoon. In terms of injuries, in terms of kind of long-term injuries, we're not expecting to see anyone back on the bench, are we, in terms of people like Dennis Sirkin, Corey Evans? Where are we at with those players and when we could maybe see them back in the squad?
Definitely not tomorrow night. I think so with Corey Evans, I think he probably would have been in the squad for one of these games, but had a very minor sort of setback in training last week, which we're assured is not in any way serious, but obviously they don't want to take any risks with Corey. So from what Dodd said last week, he was going to rejoin full training this week. So I would imagine that tomorrow's game comes too soon for him. And then potentially, could he be in the squad on Saturday away at West Brom? I would imagine he'll certainly travel with them and maybe he will be included. And Dennis Sirkin, I think, probably the week after. You know, Dodds has been really confident that he definitely will play again this season, that he's on track. Again, obviously, when you have a three-game week, your training time is very limited as well, so that's obviously a factor. So what I would imagine with Sirkin is they want them to have at least a week in full training before they sort of reintroduce him to the matchday squad. So I don't see either the Leeds or the West Brom games being ones where we see Sirkin back, but maybe Millwall, and then certainly Watford and Sheffield Wednesday, I definitely think Sirkin will be involved. And similar to Elise, really, hopefully he can get a bit of a taste of it before the end of the season, get some full training under his belt, you know, have a little break and then come back and really hit the ground running. Because that pre-season period is going to be so important for those players. We saw it last year with Niall Huggins, didn't we? Mm. I know Niall was like really, really unfortunate in terms of he had a bad injury in December, but, you know, he had a full pre-season because Sunderland didn't push him at the end of last season. And that was what really was sort of the groundwork for the brilliant first half of the campaign that he had. And it's going to be the same with Elise and Cirk, and you don't want to be taking any major risks with these players, because the most important thing is that they can have a full pre-season, because that's where you build that resilience really in your body. So yeah, I definitely think we'll see Cirkin, but I think we're probably at least a week, maybe 2 weeks away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other one is Nazari Roussin, isn't he? He's missed the last few games with a calf issue. So I'm sure we'll get an update from Mike Dodds later today about where he's at. But just finally, Phil, I think it's easy to look at these last kind of five games as Sunderland have nothing to play for in terms of they're not going to go up, they're not going to go down. But as you mentioned before, particularly in those attacking positions, there is quite a lot of competition for places now in terms of who gets on the bench, who gets in the squad. So it is going to be important in these last kind of couple of games that even though we don't know who the head coach is going to be next season, that these players show that they are ready to make an impact next season in these final five games, because it's going to be a big pre-season and they're going to want to hit the ground running at the start of next season, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it is definitely valuable. You know, I'm certainly not going to tell any Sunderland fan that there's like loads on these games and that it's really important, because it must be, you know, we feel the frustration, don't we, from having watched them go from a playoff contender to where they are now. And I think realistically, you know, I think apathy is the main word, isn't it? How can you feel any other way going into these games from where Sunderland are to where they are now? But there is definitely some sort of significance to what is happening. You know, Rigg is clearly taking major steps forward and playing his way into being a contender for first team place next year. Aushish, even though his form is definitely up and down, like he hasn't been really consistent, you know, he is now for the first time getting a consistent run of minutes. And actually, you know, that is going to be huge for him next season as well, in terms of getting that consistency, understanding what the championship is all about, adjusting to playing at that level of intensity sort of three times a week. So there is definitely some significance to these games. I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. And as you say, I think especially in the final third, you know, I think there is an element of people playing for their futures. You know, talk about Bradley Dack. We talked about Barr earlier. I'm not suggesting Barr's going to leave in the summer, but when you're in a position where you're not getting in the squad, you know, there obviously is a significance, isn't it, going into pre-season the next year. So I think that's definitely the main thing that we're looking to at the moment, isn't it, is trying to establish, you know, with a new head coach potentially coming in, which of these players are going to be front and centre next season. And, you know, the especially in these games against this calibre of opponent, you know, it's a really real opportunity for some of these players to really push themselves forward.
Yeah, just on a personal kind of level as well for these players. You mentioned there Bradley Dack. I think Sunderland have an option to extend his contract by an extra year, but he'll be kind of wanting to prove that he can, if Sunderland don't give him another year, that he can get another club and make an impact. It'll be the same with Corey Evans if he does come back and make any sort of first team appearance. Callum Stiles is another one who Sunderland have only signed him on an initial loan deal. They've got the option to sign him permanently, but if he gets another opportunity, he'll want to be proving a point that he can sign for Sunderland permanently. So there is still stuff to play for, even though there's maybe, obviously, there's not that big thing of going for promotion as there was last season. But we'll end it there, Phil, because you've got to go and speak to Mike Dodds for his pre-match press conference this afternoon ahead of that game against Leeds. And if you like what we do here at the Raw podcast, please consider subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we'll also have live updates from Mike Dodds' press conferences this afternoon, as well as build up to that game as Sunderland take on Leeds at Elland Road. Once again, thanks a lot for listening to the Raw podcast.